Geekscape.com.
White supremacy and Negro subordination. Part 13. Chapter 15. Natural relations and normal condition of the Negro. There are now between 4 and 5 million Negroes in the United States. They or their descendants must remain forever, for good or evil, an element of our population. What are their natural relations to the whites? What their normal condition? The Almighty has obviously designed all his creatures, animal as well as human, for wise, beneficent, and useful purposes. In our ignorance of the animal world, we have only domesticated or applied to useful purposes a very small number. The horse, the ox, ass, and the dog, but these we practically understand, so that even the most ignorant will not abuse them or violate their instincts. The most ignorant farmer or labourer would never attempt to force the dog to perform the domestic role of the cat, or the ox that of the horse, or the sheep that of the ass. He knows the natures of these animals, their relations to himself and to each other, and governs them accordingly. The natural relations of parent and offspring, of brothers and sisters, of husbands and wives, are also measurably understood by the most ignorant, for natural instinct, quite as much as reason, guides us in these things. The father knows that the child should obey him, and the latter feels instinctively that this obedience is a sacred duty. The same instinct prompts the brother to love his sister, and it may be said that all the relations of consanguinity and the duties that spring from them are regulated more by instinct than by reason. There are innumerable books written on this subject to teach the duties of parents and offspring, husbands and wives, but with a proper cultivation of the intellect and of the affections, just perceptions of the duties involved follow intuitively. Passing beyond these domestic and family relations, the relations of individuals, of one man to another, and to the state, or general citizenship, are less understood, for here nature must be led by reason, and though there are certain great and fixed facts that serve as landmarks for our guidance, we must mainly rely upon our reason. It is true, Christianity indicated these relations 2,000 years ago. Nevertheless, they are almost totally disregarded in the old world. But though too often misunderstood and misapplied among ourselves, they are sufficiently comprehended to constitute the foundation of our social order. Another advance, and we arrive at the relations of races, of white men and Negroes, and of other races that may chance to be in juxtaposition, and of which the whole world may be said to be profoundly ignorant in theory, while one half of our people have justly and truly solved them in practice. The social order of the South, the social and legal status of the Negro, reposes on the natural relations of the white and the black races, and as has been observed, while the world is ignorant of these relations, the people of the South, indeed it may be said the American people, have practically sold them, and to the mutual benefit of all concerned. But before we can enter on a discussion of the natural relations and social adaptations of races, we must first clearly understand the relations that we bear to each other as individuals and to the state or aggregate of individuals. All the individuals of a species, whether animal or human, of course, have the same faculties, the same wants, in a word, the same specialities. Occasionally, chance, some accident, remote or immediate, deforms or blights individuals. They may be idiotic, insane, or otherwise incapable. But these are exceptional cases that do not disturb the great, fixed and unchangeable equality, sameness or uniformity of the race. The white or Caucasian race, as has been observed, varies much more than any other race. There are tall men, short men, giants and pygmies, blondes and brunettes, red-haired and black-haired, but the nature remains the same. And if they were all placed under the same circumstances of climate, government and religion, all would exhibit the same moral characteristics, and to a certain extent, the same physical appearance. This is sufficiently illustrated among ourselves every day. Almost universally, our people have sprung from the lower classes of European society. The coarse skin, big hands and feet, the broad teeth, the pug nose of the Irish and German labourer pass away in a generation or two, and their American offspring have more delicate and classical features than even the most favoured and privileged European aristocracy. Having the same faculties, the same wants, it is a self-evident truth that they are entitled to the same rights, the same opportunities, to live out the nature with which God has endowed them. The divine author of Christianity promulgated this vital truth with great impressiveness. He selected his disciples from the lowest and most oppressed classes of the people and thundered his most terrible denunciations in the ears of the sacerdotal aristocracy. The great body of the Jewish people were mere beasts of burden to their brethren, the priestly oligarchy, which governed the state and lived in idle luxury on the toil, ignorance, superstition, and misery of the people. On all occasions, these oppressors were denounced, and the great and everlasting truth that God was no respecter of persons, and all men equally precious in his sight, even the beggar Lazarus and the repentant Magdalene, were the daily teachings of Christ. And there can be no doubt that the persecution and final crucifixion of the author of the Christian religion was intended by the rulers of the Jews to crush out the great doctrine of equality, and thus to preserve their ascendancy over the minds and fortunes of the people. The divine ordinance to do unto others as we would have them do unto us is a complete exposition of our natural relations to each other, and an indestructible rule.